Hey, everybody. Welcome to the first episode of Corinth in Your Car. My name is Luke. I'm the youth minister at Corinth Christian Church, and I'm here with Adam, our senior pastor, and Josh, our associate minister. We're really excited to dive in together and have some fun. Study was done in 2019 that revealed the average American spends 27.9 minutes one way on their commute to work. And so we thought, as a staff, about how we could redeem some of that time for you with all of the sitting in traffic at red lights that you do. And we want to help you be the best disciple that you can be. And so each and every week, we're going to have some fun together, and we're going to take a deeper look at what was preached on the Sunday before. And so, Adam, let's start with a little bit of fun. You go ahead and tell us the answer to this question so that everybody can kind of get to know what they really wanted to know about you. If you could be friends with any cartoon character, which cartoon character would you choose to be friends with?
Okay. So I'm going to cheat. And like whenever I was growing up, there was like this Superstars cartoon. And so it was Michael Jordan, Bo Jackson, Wayne Gretzky, and somebody else. I don't remember. But so that means I get to pick Bo Jackson. So I would prefer to be best friends with Bo Jackson. So how's that for a cheater answer?
I mean, if there's a cartoon character based off of him, then I don't think you might be stretching it a little bit, but I don't think it's for sure like a cheating thing. Yeah. Now, I don't know if you've dated yourself, but I was born in 96 and I have not ever heard of this cartoon.
Yeah, YouTube.
At all.
It's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube. Yeah, we'll get it there. Josh, same question for you, man. Cartoon character to be friends with. Who you got?
Oh, man. I don't know, Roadrunner. I like to run. It's probably a lame answer, but he's a cartoon, and he always got away, you know? Always
got away. I mean, do you think that you could keep up?
No. He'd be inspiring.
Inspiring. It'd get you to run a little bit. Okay, I hear you. Very cool. Well, let's dive in.
What about you? You never answered.
Yeah, you didn't answer the question, Luke.
I'm going to get out of it.
I tried to avoid it because my answer is a little bit embarrassing, but I would definitely choose Kim.
Rainbow Bright.
I know. I would choose Kim Possible.
Kim Possible?
And I would try to be more than friends. Like, Ron Stoppable was in the friend zone for so long and felt like it was time for somebody else to swoop in and give a shot. And, man, when I was a kid, that was what I was thinking. So yeah, that's why I was trying to move on so that I didn't have to tell you guys the truth about which cartoon character I would choose.
At least it's not Dora.
Yeah, no, I'm not fluent enough in Spanish to do that one. So, anyways,
impossible.
We'll see what else you guys get out of me as we kind of go through. But, man, yesterday, Adam, we talked the first sermon in our new series called Lead Like Jesus. Why don't you just give us kind of like a quick review of what you talked about and kind of the idea behind why we're kind of doing this series at the church?
Yeah, so I'll start at the end and with the second question, and so then I'll answer the first. But so really where this came from is kind of why we started this podcast. And so a few months ago, we've been doing just a lot of thinking as a staff and just trying to kind of work through, you know, how can we help, you know, disciple people in the year 2020. Let me see, it's 2022, you know, and how can we put tools in people's hands? And so, you know, I think all of us, we reached out to, you know, a handful of guys, some in their probably late 20s, some in their 30s, some in their 40s, you know, some in their early 50s and that kind of stuff. And just like, hey, if we were to start a podcast or something, what are some things that, you know, would be super helpful, you know, for you? And got all kinds of great responses, but it was like just this continual just thread with, it didn't matter if they're in their 20s, 30s, 40s, or 50s. It's like, hey, I want help. You know, how can I be a better leader? You know, be a better leader at work. How can I be a better leader, you know, in the church? How can I be a better leader at home? And so it was just kind of like, well, okay, well, that might be something we need to talk about. And so that's kind of what gave birth to the idea of this podcast, but also too to this sermon series. And it's a great book that's out there. It's been around for a really, really long time by Ken Blanchard, just called Lead Like Jesus. And so, you know, we're just stealing that title and we'll be using some of the content there. But so this week, as we were just kind of launching into it, you know, really just wanting to try to help people see, you know, the heart of the leader. And this idea, you know, that whenever it comes to why do we want to lead, you know, because it's really easy to want to lead because you think it's going to give you perks and power and, you know, those kind of things. But honestly, that's not even remotely close to what Jesus did, you know. His was completely about responsibility-based, or in other ways, it was all about serving those he was leading, and that he, like, had that burden on his heart to serve and to care for the people that were following him, and that if we truly want to, you know, follow Jesus, who is the greatest leader, you know, to ever walk the face of the earth, then that's probably where we need to align ourselves. And so, yeah, it's really just trying to get us to start thinking about, you know, what's our motivation? You know, what's our true north? And it can't be, as a leader, what's in it for me, but it's how can I help them? How can I help those who are following after? And so that's kind of where we spend our time on Sunday.
Yeah, I thought it was really helpful on Sunday. I know that you even told some stories just about people who have demonstrated what leading like Jesus looks like. And so you mentioned your coach.
Yeah.
And I want to circle back to him and just try to get the craziest story that you have of your time under his authority as a coach in your life. But I want to hit Josh first. Josh, as you kind of think through leading like Jesus in your life, who are some people that come to mind and that have demonstrated this for you? And kind of give us some insight into how their heart for Christ as a leader was evident.
Sure. Very fortunate to be a part of the family I am in. And so one of my first go-tos is just my parents. And so, man, Mark and Barbara, when I think of them, have taught me a lot about leading like Jesus. Mark, my dad, much more from a sort of an upfront, he's going to speak and he's going to preach and that sort of stuff. But beyond that, what he was on a stage or is on a stage, it was, I guess, private in our home. I remember growing up, we were always talking about scriptures, and even he would give us like a dollar or something if we memorized the scripture by the end of the week. Or at one point, he challenged me to memorize the whole Sermon on the Mount and all that kind of stuff. I remember on the front of his Bible, he just has John 3:30. Doesn't even have his name on the Bible. It's just a reference to the text that says, he must increase and I must decrease. And I remember also having just honest conversations with him, because I think it's about all of us as humans, but more so certain people want to have recognition. And he's very comfortable on a stage. And so just having honest conversations with me going, Josh, this is something that I've had to fight and remind, like, I'm not the point. I need to humble myself. And even confessing to me sometimes just struggles of, I fought this. And so kind of leading like Jesus, saying you got to be honest with yourself, kind of knowing who you are, and demonstrating humility. My mom was the quiet leader. I don't remember ever my parents, either one of them, raising their voice at us. But her in particular was just, she was quiet. She was gentle. She was always willing to take care of us and do anything we needed, go the extra mile, all of it, and just sacrificed a lot for us. Those are two of the go-tos, I think.
Let me interrupt you real quick, because I think the two examples that you give are hitting at some of what we were talking about just at the beginning of yesterday morning. And you've mentioned two people in your life, one of them your dad, who just by nature with his profession is a little bit more like organizational leadership style. But then you also mentioned your mom, who just relationally led you and your family. And man, I know yesterday, Adam, you started with like, are you a leader? And some people were like, I don't know.
Yeah, but I'm not on an org chart anymore.
But the answer is like, yeah, you are. And that's already demonstrated by Josh's examples, which I just think is really cool. No matter who you are, you have leadership roles, whether that be you're the boss of 100 employees or whether that be you are just a father and a mother or a friend.
Well, yeah, and if you think about it, so, you know, it's John Maxwell's the guy who has the quote, you know, that, you know, everything rises and falls on leadership. But he's also got this other quote that is just super important, and it's just he defines leadership as influence. And so you stop and you think about it, and it's just like you could actually make a case that a mom has far more influence, you know, in terms of leadership, you know, capacity and those things, than the CEO of a company. You know, it's got, you know, nobody should have it, but 1,000 direct reports or something like that.
Well, we have Mother's Day. We don't have CEO Day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Like Boss's Day, I think, is like some day stuck in some month that nobody even knows about kind of thing, you know. And so it's like if you're weighing the amount of influence, you know, like a mom or a dad, a grandma or grandpa that they can have over, you know, 1, 2, you know, 3, 4, however, you know, many lives, it's like, wow, the amount of influence there is extraordinary. And so it's like, oh my goodness, you are a leader because the level of influence you have is just so massive.
Yeah, you've got influence. And so as a leader, the question then becomes, what's the motivation for that? And so then you get to the heart. And Josh, I love what your dad has on the Bible, the verse reference, he's got to become great and I've got to become less. I think that's a great motto for the heart of a leader. One of the things that I took notes on in the Lead Like Jesus book with Ken Blanchard was the way that he used the word ego.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I always like to joke, I'm from Texas, and so there's the phrase, everything is bigger in Texas, and then I kind of caveat with an addition, including our egos, right? But the way that he did it in the book was that ego's an acronym, and the heart of a leader reveals what their ego is. You're either going to edge God out because your motivation for leadership is selfish, or you're going to exalt God only because your motivation for leadership is service and selflessness. And so I thought that was really, really helpful. And man, it is kind of summed up in, man, God has got to become great and I have got to become less.
Yeah. And one of the things, Josh, that I love that you were talking about, you know, with your dad, because, you know, with a platform does come the temptation to pride.
Sure.
You know? And it's like if you're not aware of that, then that's what will trip you up. And so I've always loved that about your dad.
Yeah, you know, and just service and leadership, how Jesus taught it. Jesus never said, don't be great.
Yeah.
He taught how to be great.
Yeah.
And true greatness is found in service. And it's just really funny that 2,000 years after Jesus walked the earth and taught, that our quote-unquote leadership experts are finally catching up to Jesus. And so now you have this whole genre of leadership called servant leadership, and Jesus invented it, you know, 2,000 years ago. Studies keep on showing over and over the happiest people are the most helpful people. It's not the ones trying to make themselves happy. It's those who are serving others, even combating things like dementia and Alzheimer's, you know, in certain facilities and homes. People that are serving others outside of themselves actually live longer, healthier, and better lives. So,
yeah, that's good. And it kind of leads to, Adam, what you did with the bottom line this week. Well, not bottom line, but the thought that you had over throughout the sermon was it's impossible to lead like Jesus if you won't serve like Jesus.
Correct.
Right? So Jesus was great.
Yeah.
And like Josh says, he's not saying don't be great. He's just giving you a different route to greatness.
Yeah.
And even in Matthew chapter 20, which is what you hit, he's saying, actually, if you want to be great, you've got to become a servant or a slave. And if you then want to lead like Jesus leads, then you have to serve like like Jesus serves. It's servant leadership. Talk to us a little bit about that.
Well, yeah, and the thing that I find fascinating about this, and this is one of those things, you know, it's like I'm supposed to only get 30 minutes on Sunday morning, and I end up always a little bit over that, if not a lot over that. But it's like there's so many ways to go. But one of the things I find fascinating about like the whole Matthew 20, you know, conversation is whenever you put the Gospels together, you come to realize that like what happens right after that event is John 13, you know, where Jesus washes his disciples' feet. And so it's like you've got this really, really just awkward conversation. I still can't believe, you know, James and John. It's crazy. It's just like Jesus is like, hey, yo, I'm gonna die, gonna be, you know, betrayed, spit upon, beaten, all these other kind of things. They're like, yeah, that's great. Hey, we've been thinking, you know? And it's just like,
it's a dangerous thing whenever a man says, yeah, I've been thinking.
Yeah. Hey, we've been thinking. And, you know, it's funny, you know, Mark throws it all on James and John, but I love how Matthew, it's like, yeah, they got their mommy to go do it, you know? It's just kind of like, oh my gosh.
Helicopter moms were a thing.
Yeah, no, yeah.
Even back then.
Yeah. And so they got their mommy to go ask, but it's just like, yeah, hey, we've been thinking, you know, we think we deserve a really, really cool seat. And it is funny, Josh, and I love, you know, the observation that you made there, that it's like he didn't get onto them for wanting to be great. Mm-hmm. He was just like, you guys don't understand what greatness really is. And let me show you how to be great. And so then you back up John 13 right behind that, you know, and you've got John going. And so now knowing that, you know, Luke, you've got your Bible open there, but it's like knowing that God had, the Father had put all things, Adam's translation, under his control, he now showed them the full extent of his love. And that's whenever he, you know, if you're familiar with the story, he wraps the towel around his waist and gets the water basin and he washes his disciples' feet. And so it's like he not only gives them the instruction, if you want to be great, you've got to become least. You've got to be a servant. You've got to be a slave. He's like, let me make sure you're getting this. And I'm going to back up my teaching with a parable, a living parable of here's what true servant leadership, you know, looks like. And so, if we're going to be the kind of leader that Jesus was, if he is our role model, then that is those are our marching orders, you know, because even after he gets done washing their feet, he's like, now that I've done this for you, hey, do it for one another.
Yeah, and I forget where I've heard this first, but someone once said, you know, Jesus never asked us to do anything he didn't do.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of the temptation of a leader is, I'm in this position so I get to boss you around.
Mm-hmm.
But Jesus didn't do that. He never, never asks us to do anything he didn't do. He's literally laid down every single part of himself.
Well, and that's the rewards-based leader, you know, that we were talking about. You know, that is the whole thing. It's just like, I want to become a leader so I don't have to do the things I don't want to do anymore, you know. And it's just like, I just want to be able to hand all those things off. And obviously, there's delegation and all those other kind of things. But whenever the heart of the matter is, it's just like, I just want the power. I want the perk. I want the ability to, you know, the recognition and those things. It's like, that's an awful, like, way to approach leadership.
Yeah, and that's a motivation of leadership that actually leads you to destruction, right? Because mm-hmm. wherever the pride is there, then comes what you were mentioning too yesterday was the fear.
Yeah.
Right? So whenever your motivation for leadership is selfish,
yeah,
you then lead out of fear and protection of yourself, which yep. leads to, you know, dishonesty and yeah. you just like different insecurities that you might not even be aware that you've got
yeah.
because your motivation's all out of whack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's what leads to, you know, intimidating people, you know, that's what leads to, you know, somebody who won't listen to feedback, you know, it's what leads to all those kind of things, because if it's all about, you know, yourself, then it's the self-protection. And it's just like, I got to protect, you know, because I don't want to lose this reward that I feel like I've earned.
Yeah. Do you think it would be too much of a stretch, or kind of right on the money to say sometimes the reason that we are bad leaders is because we've made an idol of ourselves?
Oh,
right. Like, yeah. That's what we're getting at, right? So if the motivation of your leadership is selfish, it's because you are worshiping you.
Or let's add this to it. Or you are worshiping the approval of others.
Sure.
So either way, it is you are not living for, to use a phrase from the message, you're not living for that audience of one.
Yep.
You know, your eyes are not upward. They're either inward or they're outward. And anytime we get into that kind of place, that's where, you know, that's where we find trouble.
Yeah, talk to us a little bit, Josh, about just kind of what comes to your mind whenever we say use the phrase audience of one, right? So it's really, really easy because of our own brokenness to seek the approval of others. Mm-hmm. But that's whenever our motivation for leadership might be revealed to kind of be off a little bit. So what does it look like whenever you are leading to just solely focus on the fact that you are doing it for that audience of one?
Yeah, so the stage of life I'm in right now with lots of kids running around the house, that's going to be probably the primary place where I start to go about audience of one type stuff and why am I... You know, whatever it is, if it's a conversation about discipline, you know, it's easy to step into those. It's easy to step into those trying to, like, you want to see justice happen, right? Or make sure the kids are being good to each other. But then it ends up being more about, like, my success as a dad. Like if I'm a good enough dad, if I've given them a good enough explanation of how they need to fix the problem, well, of course, they should, you know, fix it. And I'm reminded every single day of, like, my own brokenness as well, that I'm a broken human being, you know. And so those conversations with kids really need to be about realigning their heart of worship to God. Because, you know, sure, they should respect me or Sasha or whatever, but really it's about God. And so the audience of one, like, to circle back to that to kind of relate it, is if I'm being a parent because God has tasked me with that, that's going to change the way in which I talk to my kids. That's going to change kind of the subject matter of the conversations, you know, to gear their hearts back towards, like, you've been created by God, for God, you know? And so practically, some of the words that we've tried to use in our better moments, just, you know, use the hands that God gave you to love the sister or brother that God gave you. You know, God created you on purpose and for a purpose. And so it's easy as a parent to slip into trying to justify yourself or trying to make yourself a success because your kids behaved a certain way. But it really, like, I don't know if I'm actually answering that question. I feel like I'm kind of scattered, but it's a daily process. You have to wake up every single day and remind yourself of the gospel. And you get it wrong a lot, but you sure keep trying and keep coming back to the grace that God has given you as well. So.
Yeah, I love that. I just a few days ago, in my Utmost for His Highest, which is like a Devo book by Oswald Chambers.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
I know that you guys are pretty familiar with it. So in fact, you that turned me onto it, which I'm grateful for. But he was talking about, until you understand how broken you are as a person, mm-hmm. you can't be used by God for the service of His kingdom as a leader. And so you have to, yeah, I love it. Daily remind yourself of the gospel. And the gospel, the first part of the gospel, is that you're kind of messed up.
Yeah.
Like that, you can't appreciate the glory of the gospel until you realize the brokenness in yourself. And so as a leader then, right, you understand a little bit about who you actually are. And so if we're going back to this heart of the leader, the motivation for leadership, is it selfless or is it selfish? Where's your heart really at?
Right.
Are you edging God out or are you exalting God only? And we've talked about how whenever it's evident that you are edging God out, that pride is a very big issue that comes to the surface. But whenever you're exalting God only, then the characteristic of humility in leadership actually comes. And humility is knowing whose you are and who you are. So Adam, talk to us a little bit about what humility looks like whenever our motivation for leadership is actually spot on.
Yeah. So let's take one step back and go. So we're talking about, I mean, you throw a great big umbrella on this. We're talking about identity. You know, one of those things that until we finally have a grasp on who we are, whose we are, you know, then whether we're leading at home, leading at work, leading a team, we're always going to struggle. And that pride and that fear thing is always going to creep up. And so you look at Jesus, okay, because I think it's called Lead Like Jesus. And it's like, that's a guy who knew who he was. Okay. You can't read through the Gospels and go, did Jesus really not know who he was? You know, was he kind of confused about his identity? It's like, no, he knew, you know, 100% clear, you know? And so that's why you read through it. And who does he refer to himself as? I think that's the grammatic way to say that. He's like, I'm the Son of God. Now, he never says that like blatant, you know, just like, and thus I say, I am the Soneth of Godeth, you know, kind of thing. But he calls God Father. It's like over a, you know, it's like over 100 times, you know, it's like 150 times or so. He's just like, yeah, God's my Father. God's my Father. God's my Father. And so that was like a true north for him. I'm the Son of God. But then he also had this thing. He's like, I'm the Son of Man, you know, and which is this, that's the humility to where it's like, I'm not going to exalt myself walking around saying, I'm the Son of God, I'm the Son of God, I'm the Son of God. I'm going to say, I'm the Son of Man, you know. And so I think that the principle that we start to pull out from that as we lead like Jesus is, you know, we humble ourselves. That's humility. It's not our job to exalt ourselves. But here's the thing, is that whenever you do humble yourself, others will exalt you. You know, but here's the flip of it. Whenever we get into this place, and this is the pride thing again, when we exalt ourselves, others will humble us, you know, and they will just kind of come at us. And that's not just a God thing. That's just how people work, you know. And so I find this interesting. You know, it's funny. It's like on stage, you know, preaching and those kind of things. This is kind of, you know, what would they call this? Inside baseball stuff, you know. It's like whenever I make fun of myself or tell a story about, I almost always just try to tell stories about how I failed, you know, because nobody wants to hear anybody get up there and just like brag about, you know, something great that they did. It's like, no, tell me how you're bad at this. And, you know, but whenever I make fun of myself, it's endearing. Whenever I criticize myself, you know, people, you know, will be like, man, that really relates. But whenever, like, I accidentally slip up and I praise myself, that's whenever I open myself up more to criticism, you know, because it's like in that moment I've shifted from exalting God only to I'm exalting myself. I'm edging God out. The pride thing sneaks in. And so, yeah, you know, it's just like humility is this key of just, you know, what is it, C.S. Lewis's quote, Josh, Luke, you guys might remember, it's like humility is not thinking less of yourself, but thinking of yourself
less often.
Yeah.
Less
often.
Less, yeah. Yeah. That's right. I think what I'm hearing you say is really just whenever you humble yourself, you'll be exalted by others. But also I'll take that one step further and go to Philippians 2.
Mm-hmm.
Philippians 2, whenever you humble yourself, you lower yourself, not only will you be exalted by others like you're talking about, but you'll actually be exalted by God.
Yeah.
Right? So the way in which we experience the reward and the yeah. blessing is that we find like favor in through God to us. And so it's like the example of Jesus, although he was God,
yeah.
he did not consider that something to hold on to because he wasn't concerned with himself,
mm-hmm.
right? He wasn't edging God out. Although he was, he left that, came down from heaven to be like one of us, and became humble enough to die on the cross. And so therefore,
yeah.
God highly exalted him and gave him the name that's above every other name. And, you know, we won't have the name that's above every other name,
yeah.
But we will be co-heirs, and we will be yeah. called little capital, little, like not capital, but little letter sons of God.
Right.
Like we will be that whenever we humble ourselves and realize that the gospel is still true over our lives. And that means that as leaders, we've got to get the motivation right.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's great, great insight there, Luke. Yeah, just love that.
So let's circle back. I hinted at kind of at the beginning of the episode that Adam, I wanted to hear just something crazy about your coach. So you told us a little bit about your coach. What was some like one of the just most memorable things that happened while he was coaching you?
Well, I mean, it's so much. I mean, you take a guy and Coach Armstrong. He died in March of 21, and so I actually had a chance to preach at his memorial service. It was hilarious. It's like a 2.5 hour long memorial service, which is normally just like holy moly, you know, kind of thing. But honestly, I could have sat there for another three because there's like I think about a dozen of us. You know, they got a chance to get up and talk. And so I think the thing about Coach, craziest stories I've probably already shared from stage. I mean, you know, the dude was nuts. And, you know, like one of my favorite things that we would do in practice, I don't know that you can even do this anymore, but we'd do layup lines and that stuff. And, you know, those like blocking pads that you can hold, you know, like for football. He would just be underneath the basket, and every time, you know, we would come through the line, you know, like, remember, Coach is like 6'4", 230, you know, strong dude, just big, strong dude. He would just like wind up and just swing that thing at you as hard as he could. And he's like, you got to learn to finish through contact, you know. And then I think really he only did that whenever he was frustrated or mad about something, probably at home or somewhere else. And so we got to have that taken out on us. But, you know, and so I think about that, but for me, it's just like I think through just the amount of time he spent with me and, you know, whether it would be, he'd be like, hey, I'm doing a basketball camp up here in Butler, Missouri. Will you go with me, you know, and it would be me staying after practice or being early to practice, you know. It would get to the point where he would just be like, hey, just turn the lights out whenever you leave kind of stuff. But the amount of time that he would just invest in me, you know, and he had three daughters. He had a wife at home. He had other things that were on his plate. And I think one of the, and I knew this to be true, so it wasn't like a massive revelation to me, but one of the great things about sitting there, you know, and listening to all the stories over those, you know, 3 hours of the service was it's just like, that's just who he was, you know? And it wasn't about some reward he was going to get, you know? Not even close, because like he was the high school basketball coach in Carthage, Missouri, you know?
Sorry, what, Missouri?
Yeah, exactly. Carthage in the southwest corner of Missouri, little town, you know, 11,000 people kind of thing. And yeah, he got recognition. Yeah, all those other kind of things. But it's not like, you know, it was about climbing a ladder or any of those other kind of things for him. He just wanted to invest in young men and create, help to create guys that were going to be good dads, guys who were going to be good husbands, who were going to be hard workers. I remember him, he would pull us, you know, we'd just be standing there at practice or something, and there's this guy named Caleb over there who wasn't a great basketball player by any stretch of the imagination, but one of the hardest workers ever met in my life, you know, at that point. And I remember Coach just, you know, be like, hey, you see Caleb over there? That guy's going to make a lot of money, you know, because that guy knows how to work, you know. Or another guy would be out there and didn't even make the team because he was terrible, but, you know, Coach would just, he was watching him. He goes, that guy there, he's going to be successful because he knows how to work. He's like, he can't play basketball, you know, but he knows how to work. And so just always instilling these kind of things, you know, and it was just an investment, you know, investment. And, you know, I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, I love it. I know you mentioned Coach. Josh, you mentioned parents. I think for me, the name that comes to mind is my youth minister, Richard Hamilton. And no, that is not the shooting guard for the Detroit Pistons back in the early 2000s. It's a different guy.
Not Rip Hamilton with the face mask.
Not Rip Hamilton, the OG, which, by the way, the San Antonio Spurs beat in the 2005 NBA Finals. So
big NBA shout, still
big
going
shout out
on.
To that.
Is that still happening?
It's still a thing. Now, I'll talk about the Spurs in the early 2000s. I'm not going to talk about the Spurs anymore.
Do they still have a team?
Something like that. But anyway, so Richard, man, he was the type of leader that wanted to develop other leaders, and he wasn't concerned with hogging stage time. He was comfortable sharing it, and so he looked at like little ninth or tenth grade dweebish Luke, and he said, "Hey, for youth church on Sunday morning, I'd like you to lead a communion meditation, and just kind of prepare all of the teenagers for communion." And so I got up there, and I think that my legs shook at about 100 miles per hour, and I don't remember what I talked about, but I do remember the closing line of my communion meditation was, "So you just need to let Jesus be the driver of your car." And what I had not talked about before that closing line was anything related to Jesus being the driver of your car. Like, nothing about it was related to
a bunch
to
of
that.
Elementary students?
A bunch of teenagers. So teenagers, high school,
okay.
Middle school students.
Okay,
and
well,
just
some of them could drive.
Some of them could drive, but, like, nothing related to it. Now, the reason that was on my mind is because when I was in middle school, lower high school, my favorite band in the whole world was Reliant K. And so Reliant K was, like, this kind of, like, somewhat grungy Christian punk band back in the day. And so they had a song called K-Car, and it was about that. And so I did the communion meditation, and then for some reason, maybe it was the spirit, maybe it was the fact that I was in 10th grade and obsessed with a band, decided to say, "So you just need to let Jesus be the driver of your car. Okay, let's pray and then take communion." And it was like the worst communion meditation in the entire world. Yeah. And he came up to me afterwards and he said, "That was awesome. You're going to do it again." And then over the course of the rest of my high school career, it was that guy, Richard, my youth minister, who just continued to provide opportunity after opportunity after opportunity for me and others to lead with him. And so talk about somebody who isn't concerned with, you know, the approval of others, or isn't motivated by the pride that's within him, but is actually exalting God only, and it's evident by the way that he's treating and serving others and sharing leadership with them. And the reason, one of the many reasons that I am where I am today, is because he asked me to do that communion meditation in the first place, right? And so as leaders, we've got to think through how are we going to not just make sure that our motivation is right and pure of heart, but also how are we serving others? And I think we'll hit that as we get through the series.
Yeah.
I think a couple of things I'd like to do to wrap up our time together is I want to have you guys think through, and I've got one too. I want to have you guys think through, it's just like a leadership challenge that you would give to the people listening right now. One challenge that you would give them as a leader, something they could do, something they can try, something they need to remember, whatever you kind of go. And then after we do that, let's have some fun to wrap up, and we'll do some hot takes.
Oh, yeah. I got some spicy takes.
We'll do there. Spicy takes.
Spicy.
Ugh, can't wait. Leadership challenge. Josh, talk to us about, just for our audience, what's a challenge that you would give them as a leader?
Sure. The title of a book is popping into my head. It's a Simon Sinek book called Leaders Eat Last. And he actually kind of stole that idea from the military, from the Marines. And they do that. They're leaders while they are screaming at their, you know, in their face, boss them around and get them to work and all kinds of stuff. They eat last. And talking to those who have been in the Marines just said, that's absolutely true. And so translating it to my life, or to your life, if you're listening, just how can you maybe go last, serve your family at dinner first? You know, that's just a really practical thing. My high school soccer coach as well, Coach Lewis, taught us a really valuable lesson when I was a senior and got to be a captain. Once again, the temptation was, hey, you're a captain, so you get to be like the boss or whatever and tell those freshmen what to do. The first thing he told us was, hey, boys, the captains bag the balls. After practice is over, captains bag the balls. Because being a leader isn't bossing people around. It's doing the things that nobody wants to do. So I would just say that. Just maybe you're hungry, but serve your kids and your family first. Or maybe it's at the office, you know. Let everybody go first through the door. I mean, that's just a super practical thing. It doesn't take a lot of skill necessarily, but it's just a reminder every single time a door is open or a food in line or whatever. Just go last. See what happens.
Love that. That's pretty much, in a word, selflessness.
Yeah, sure.
Right, thinking of others before yourself, which hits at what we've talked about our entire time so far. Adam, what do you got for us?
I think if you're pigeonholing me to one, I think it would be this. This week, try to get others to talk more than you talk. And so talk less, listen more. So use a Maxwell quote again. It says, you know, earn the right to be heard by listening to others. Seek to understand a situation before making judgments about it. And then I'm a big journaler. You know, I journal every day, 6 days a week. And I think, you know, to spend some time reflecting on that, you know, our effectiveness is rooted in our reflectiveness, you know, kind of thing. And so spend some time just journaling, just going, all right, so what did I learn by being slow to speak and quick to listen? You know, because here's the thing, and this is why this is just important. We're smarter when we say nothing, you know. We can only learn like when we're listening.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess my kind of just pointed way to say it would be, so do you want to be smart or do you want to look smart? You know, and so if you actually want to learn, then, you know, slow down, listen, and then reflect on it. And so that would be probably where I would go just this week. Make it a goal. I'm going to see how much I can get people to talk to me so that I can listen to them.
Yeah. You're reminding me of Proverbs chapter 10, verse 19. So funny. Too much talk leads to sin.
Yeah.
So be sensible and just keep your mouth shut.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, so yeah, it's yeah, just yeah, like, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Listen more than you talk. Slow to speak. And quick to listen, slow to become angry, all that stuff.
I read
stuff.
That one somewhere too.
Yeah, I think that's in that little book in the Bible or something like that. Here's what I would say in addition to what Adam says from stage. If you want to serve, what's the line, Adam? Off the top of my head, it's impossible to lead like Jesus if you won't serve like Jesus. Yeah. I would add this: if you want to lead like Jesus, then you have to lead with Jesus. Yeah. And so you mentioned, Adam, one of the best qualities of your coach is the amount of time that you spent with him. Yeah. And you were able to catch on to some of his leadership because of that. Mm-hmm. Same thing for us. Like if we're not spending time with Jesus, then we're not going to know who he is. Mm-hmm. And we're certainly not going to know how he leads. Yeah. And so, man, if you want to lead like Jesus, I'd say you need to lead with Jesus. And so include him in your daily rhythms. And kind of just watch and see what happens to you as a leader, as a disciple, and then do your best to stop edging God out, and man, exalt God only because of His great grace over our lives. So, hot takes. I got two. Okay. This one's classic. It's talked about some in the hallways at church already.
Okay.
But let's go ahead and answer the question: is a hot dog a sandwich? We gotta know. Is it a sandwich?
I think you gotta hand off to Josh there, but Josh also has to be careful because I know his wife has very strong opinions on this.
Give us the hot take.
So my wife, basically, her philosophy is, she's just going to disagree with Jeff Allen. So whatever he thinks, she's going to side with the opposite, you know? So, I think a hot dog is a sandwich because it's on the menu under the sandwiches. I saw a picture one time.
Where is this at?
I have to look it up. It's in my phone.
It's just on a picture of a random restaurant, not somewhere that you actually went.
Was it a Mexican restaurant?
Yeah. Hot dog is a sandwich at the Mexican restaurant. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
A torta.
A torta. Well, see, because
that's what I'll go with today.
That's kind of where this breaks down, right? So a lot of people, they say sandwich is bread, substance, bread. And so if you say hot dog is a sandwich, then also burrito is a sandwich, right? Because it's bread, substance, bread, or a taco could be a sandwich, right? Because like a taco is bread, substance, bread, just like hot dog is bread, substance, bread.
You'd even have to say
that beef ravioli is a sandwich.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of thinking if you follow the logic here, it kind of leads me to believe that hot dog isn't a sandwich. Now, of course, I asked this hot take because I'm very passionate about this hot take, as you can tell now. But I'm thinking it just couldn't be.
It could not be a sandwich?
I just don't think it could be a sandwich.
The real question is, how many hot dogs have you ever eaten in one sitting?
That does not need to be talked about on this podcast. But even just at our VBS family night, we served hot dogs to everybody who came out.
Yeah.
And I asked a lot of people the question, how many hot dogs is too many hot dogs? And I had eaten one more hot dog than the average response, which was 5.
The average response was five.
That was too much.
And I plussed it.
So you plussed it.
It was delicious, and I did pay for it later. But that is neither here nor there.
Water, like,
oh no, you won't find me doing that because that's gross. Nobody likes soggy buns.
A lot of nitrates.
Yeah. All right, another hot take. So this is a question I get asked a lot. I'm going to take the question. So everybody is thinking, you know, who is the greatest basketball player of all time? Everybody in this room, I think, is wise enough to know that answer to that question is Michael Jordan. Yes?
Yep.
So, ooh, we have something different. Because I want to get this, and then I want to ask a bigger question than this.
Yeah, so I think that, you know, especially with, you know, Bill Russell passing last week,
sure.
I think that it's like, it's really hard to compare the eras. And so if you're throwing on, let's just throw the caveat on of like, you know, modern era or something like that, absolutely Michael Jordan with you. But if it's like of all time, man alive, you just kind of start looking through some of the things that Bill Russell did, you know, and like, what was it, 10 or 11 rings.
You have more rings than fingers.
Yeah.
He's got
MVPs, and he doesn't have finals MVPs. But that's because they didn't do it at the time, and the trophy was literally named after
him. So somebody threw this stat out after he had passed away that just blew my mind. It was like in his career, he played in like 21 elimination games, you know, like for a championship, a game 7, you know, gold medal or something like that. And in 21 games, do you want to know what his record was?
21?
21-0.
21-0.
Wow. Never lost a game whenever the, you know,
whenever
it was on the line. And so that's why I'd say it's like comparing the eras are really, really hard because it's like, you know, they wore basically like, you know, canvas wrapped on whatever hard rubber outsole Chuck Taylors, mm-hmm. you know, versus, you know, what we've got now.
Yeah, it's tough. I even tell students, because students are of the generation who don't even know Michael Jordan, like they've never seen him play, or they never saw the era of basketball that he was in. But I even have a hard time comparing LeBron James to Michael Jordan because the game has changed so much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
Like
pace of play, all those.
Yeah, pace games. Of play. Now here's the question.
Real quick on Bill Russell. Did you know this? I didn't know this until this past week, that he could high jump 6'10".
Oh my goodness!
And so those of you who know how the high jump works, you know it's got like the what is it, the Fosbury flop or whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
Back then, they didn't have that. A lot of the guys would do the straddle thing or
the scissor jump
or those kind of things. He didn't even know how to do that.
So he just jumped up and cleared the bar
and just like fell over it. And it's like 6'10". Like, dude didn't even practice the high jump. He just walked out to the track one day and was like, hey, I'd like to do the high jump today. And the coach was like, okay. And so like he's like, well, it's what's the record, you know? And so they're like this, and he's like, okay, do 6'10", you know? And he did it, just nuts. He could have been an Olympic high jumper.
Yeah,
it's nuts.
If the Israelite army was full of a bunch of Bill Russells, God might not have needed to make the wall fall down in Jericho,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's the question I really wanted to get at, because that's kind of the easy one to ask, which is the greatest basketball player of all time. What I want to ask is who's the first person that comes to your mind when you think, who is the most successful athlete of all time? So it could be the basketball world, or it could be a different world. Most successful athlete of all time.
Is that like money, winnings?
Kind of whatever. Money, winnings, fame, kind of the whole gamut of options there.
I mean, it makes me want to just like throw up in my mouth a little bit. But, you know, if we're being honest, you know, you kind of got to get into that Tom Brady land, man. I mean, dude's 40. He's older than I am, and he's still out there, you know. It's like I play golf like once in a week, and I need to be put in traction for 24 hours. And this guy's out there at 45, you know, still throwing 3-yard passes. You know, that guys are running for 80 yards. But, you know, like he's an incredible winner, though. I mean, and so we'll make Luke feel good, too. I mean, Tim Duncan's, you know, fairly successful.
There we go.
Yeah. So Luke just perked up.
I am really grateful that you said that. That is not even – I think that Tim Duncan is the greatest power forward the NBA ever saw. Yeah. And I argue with a lot of people that Tim Duncan was better than Kobe Bryant, which I know is also another hot take.
Definitely a better teammate.
That's not either here nor there. I think Tom Brady is a name that you got to throw out there, most successful athletes of all time. I even think about – like a Tiger Woods,
yeah,
or even a Michael Phelps, for crying out loud. Like Ali, gold medals.
Mark Spitz, too, another Olympic swimmer.
He doesn't know who Mark Spitz is.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, Mark,
you know who Mark Spitz is?
Mark Spitz at what?
Yeah,
like, I don't know.
Spitz the watermelon.
Yeah, he was Michael Phelps before Michael Phelps.
No, he was, an American Olympian who just, like, won everything he did.
Yeah.
Set records, world records and things like that, or... here's another, like a runner, Carl Lewis is just from the moment in history, that's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah.
He was able to do, I don't know if it's most successful of all time, but it's a pretty big moment.
Ever hear him try to sing the national anthem?
No.
Yeah. You need to YouTube that right there. It'll make your day. It will make your day. It's like, dude can be that good at running and he is just as bad at singing.
Well, I mean, who did it better? Him or Fergie?
Oh, I guarantee you it would not be Carl Lewis.
Okay.
I guarantee you. I don't even know. What is
the words.
Because there's another one you need to YouTube is Fergie singing the national anthem.
Fergie?
That is one of the people who is a part of the Black Eyed Peas.
Okay, that's who
so
I
we're talking
was.
Like Boom Boom Pow.
Yeah.
That type of stuff.
Or the royal family, right? Sarah Ferguson, they call her Fergie too over there.
Sure, something like that. I don't know.
Only like... a few people
royal
know that.
Family. And that's why we throw all the tea in the sea.
I'm married to a woman who knows everything about the royal family. So
there you go. Yeah, the royal family is intense, man.
We fought a war, so we don't have to care about that
anymore. We don't have to think about that, yeah.
The queen just, like, she's been queen for like 70 years or something ridiculous like that. Anyway, it's insane.
Yeah, well, maybe on our next episode we will pick up on some hot takes with the royal family, and if something happens to us, you'd know who it might have been. So, it's been really fun to hang out with everybody today. Adam, Josh, any last thoughts, or are we good to go?
Like and subscribe. I think, aren't you supposed to say that at the end? At the end of a podcast, and subscribe.
Everybody,
be sure to leave a rating.
Want to make sure that you like and subscribe.
Yeah.
Please take the time. It'll really help us out quite a bit.
Leave a review on wherever you listen to.
Yeah.
Get the word out.
Let's try to get a little bit of engagement going. Like, so not while you're doing this, because if this is Corinth in your car, you're driving to work right now probably. But like whenever you get to work, send us a message or comment on our Facebook page at Corinth Christian Church and just let us know who you think the most successful athlete of all time is. Right, so let us know. Do you agree with the Tom Brady, Tiger
Woods?
Can
anybody
Woods?
Who's a UGA or a Falcons or a Braves fan like even answer this question?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right.
I don't know.
It's Herschel Walker.
It is what it is. Yeah, do the things. Like, subscribe, interact, comment. Let us know what you liked, all that sort of stuff. And we'll see you on Sunday morning for part 2 of Lead Like Jesus. And then we'll be back here in your car that following Monday. Until then, peace and grace, and we'll see you.